There we go. That was just me being stupid. Yeah.
Okay.
Although it's weird that he didn't show up. He did pop in as soon as I added him. So anyway.
I don't know. I assume maybe Craig had some libertarian tendencies and you booted him out for that reason.
Don't say that word again. Triggered. Libertarians.
Now we're recording. So
the wet dreams of 14-year-old males everywhere.
Mm-hmm. See, because I'm hostage to you doing the recording,
I did kick myself out of a channel too, so you know I apply all these things equally.
You probably deserved it.
It was pretty amazing.
Well, I'm sure I deserved it. I know me.
Okay. Self-awareness is a very hard thing. Few of us really truly reach that point where we are neutral.
No, I don't think I'm completely self-aware. The smallest hint of the horrible person I am, I can probably see. It's kind of like getting a glimpse of, you know, one of the elder gods.
Yeah. So while we are waiting Jesse's arrival, if anybody has kind of questions about their character or, you know, something in the rules, I'll be more than happy to tackle them. I don't want to hold myself out as an expert on the rules. I've read them a few times. Feel like I've got a good handle on all the basics, but there are probably going to be aspects of these rules that I fumble and stumble around with because this will be the first time I ever run it. But
sure, I'll draw the list with second ed Warhammer. So
right. Well, and that's the history of this game was started as a desire to take first/second edition Warhammer and kind of bring it forward and keep it alive as kind of a reaction to what Fantasy Flight did with third edition Warhammer. So it's a lot of its DNA is first and second edition Warhammer with some theoretically some refinements. So I guess I don't really have much experience with first or second edition Warhammer Fantasy, so I'm mostly accepting those representations.
It's pretty close. It basically tries to Pathfinder, the themes is what the joke I'd make be, where it's like, this is totally not Nurgle, the god of diseases.
Sure.
Or any professions related to him. Don't sue us, Games Workshop.
Right.
So.
Yeah, he clearly, when he was doing it, was careful to avoid invoking the wrath of Games Workshop. So,
which it seems like a really good thing to be careful of, because I think they're a little suey.
Oh my goodness!
I just got into the 3D printing thing though, and their days are numbered. I can't imagine how they're going to survive. Lots of people having these things.
Yeah,
they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Maybe those models are out there, right?
Yeah, you can't. They try to take them down, but they just go back up. They make their own, start little Patreons, and you know, you could buy the printer and everything you need to print them for less than.
If you modify like the thumb on a guy, like when does it become?
So the difficulty, right, is. You can't put something up that says, you know, Blood Angel Space Marine, right? But you could put something up that says, Spaceman in armor, right? Mm-hmm. And it, pretty much everything is down to their icons then, right? So if they've trademarked an icon like the Imperial Eagle, right? You can't put the Imperial Eagle on your Spaceman's armor. But most of the other stuff, though,
we'll just change. What if you change the icon slightly?
Yeah, that's what people do, right?
Yeah, so, of course. Yeah, I'm not really sure I have any.
But they're not above just sending scary letters,
of course.
So they'll just send a scary letter, and the guy's like, ah,
Yeah, because if they even if they decide to sue you, it's going to cost them resources, but it's going to cost you a lot of resources, relatively speaking.
Right. Yep.
That's how these free markets work.
Oh shit!
I mean, they also work by by making technological advances that render it null and void. So there you go.
Yeah.
So free markets are.
No! I'm going to kick you.
Predicated on healthy respect for property rights. Having said that, most libertarians would suggest that our current intellectual property body of law is far too skewed in favor of against innovation and against free exchange of ideas, and
of course
favors rent seeking and big boys muscling out, as evidenced by the Apple Samsung endless lawsuits over every aspect of phone operation and swiping and this, that, and the other. So just keeps an army of lawyers employed, which, you know, lawyers are happy
about. I'm
not
in favor of that either. But
so anybody got questions about their character? Or
was I supposed to pick out a weapon? I noticed other people talking about weapons.
Let's see what we've got here. It's possible, because I think I did your character first, but maybe I actually didn't finish your character out.
That would be fine. I actually did read through the character stuff, so I know I'm a commoner, right? That gives me a list of choices for gear kind of stuff.
Yeah, your archetype comes with a group of trappings that you can have. And so you were a commoner, so let's go and see. Because I am looking
at like a maul looked pretty good. Bandages, bottle bomb, grave root, holy symbol, leather sandals, or heavy boots, rucksack, shiv, simple attire, warm vest, and choose one, shepherd's sling with sling stones or splitting maul or threshing flail.
You liking the splitting maul, I assume?
I am.
All right, so let's go down here. Sound to it.
Yes, it does. In fact, in our Curse of Strahd game, my barbarian also has a maul, so, you know, it's becoming my thing.
Splitting maul.
I love the splitting maul.
Ooh. All maul party.
That's a simple melee, isn't it, Caleb?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. Are you asking, Caleb?
It totally is.
Yeah.
Jesus, it looks like a... It's so like the axes you use to cut logs with, is what that thing is.
Splitting maul?
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, you put the wedge in the wood, and then you drive the wedge in with... I've actually used a splitting maul. They would be a really bad weapon to get hit in the head with.
Yeah, this would... What kind of surgeon am I?
let's see. So it's two-handed. Its encumbrance is 3. Damage bonus is combat. You got to copy these things over here. Hopefully, if this is a thing that we end up deciding to do, they're going to beef up this character sheet a little bit. So it's not bad, but there are, like, there's places to put traits, but there's not enough space to actually put what the trait is. So I put the name of the trait, but it doesn't really tell you what it does for you.
Let's see, traits. Where is that on the character? Because I swear I pumped it in, but I could be crazy.
No, you put talents.
Oh yeah, because they've got boxes which you can stretch out.
Yeah, so that worked. But the traits just give you a list.
Gotcha.
So Duck, you should now have a splitting maul.
I saw you.
Do you
want to
test
yeah?
that out and see what happens? Looks good. Looks like you are in. Is she? All right, excellent. So you have a weapon now.
Cool.
So, do you still have those trappings pulled up?
Oh no, I changed the page, but I can probably get back there pretty quickly.
Let's go back to Commoner. I'm just curious what kind of
bandages. Yeah, I'm back. It's page 46.
Yeah, I see it. And Crack, did you see that I shared a Dropbox with you that has the
yes
phone PDF version of the rulebook? So much easier to work on a phone or an iPad. So So Duck, you don't have armor. You have simple attire, and that has a quality called dangerous, which basically means if you take damage, you have to worry about bleeding.
Okay. Well, we need to change that. Okay, you're changing it. Okay.
Well, no, that's it's. Oops.
Well, the leather was in my character from before. I'm just saying. Now, right.
That's
now
the,
I can see
that's the default.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the default. Is leather. So I'm not gonna add all the other trapping.
Put that in there.
Nope. No, it starts at leather, but. Like basic normal clothing is zero damage threshold modifier, and it has this quality dangerous. Basically, if it takes damage, you have to worry about bleeding. And bleeding is one of those things that, like, I sort of remember how it works, but I probably will have to look at it again if somebody starts in that situation. Anybody else have questions looking at their character sheet? Or
yeah, do I not have an iconic trapping? I have
an iconic trapping. I have to blame Art because I think he's the one that brought that up, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that was something that threw me a little bit. If the so my iconic trapping is, I think, my blackjack, but I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be something separate or if that was sort of like your one thing.
So I don't think everyone automatically gets an iconic trapping. I think it's a product of your profession. So I think if this is not correct, then we'll have to go back and look at something. But I think with vigilante, part of that profession is it gives you an iconic trapping, whereas a lot of the professions don't. But I could be wrong. So let's see what.
I don't remember seeing one, but for Commoner.
Well, look, when you first wrote that, I'm like, what's he talking about, iconic trapping? So I'm pretty sure I went and looked at it and said, let's see.
Professions. Barber surgeon.
Oh, that's good. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't see that there. Mm-hmm.
I am intrigued by the rules in the system, so I'm glad we're taking it out for a test drive.
Yeah, it's probably going to be a little bumpy, but I think we'll have a pretty good idea of what it can do when we get done. And so that's interesting.
It had, it had a lot of promise from my initial read through. That's what I'm kind of saying.
One of the things that's always sad to see, though, is something like that chaos and order system where it's like at the end of your session you can get 1 point, and then if you play 10 sessions in a row maybe you'll get that's very aspirational.
The fact that they just refer to 10 sessions,
well, no, right. Just that, like, to have one thing happen to you, right? Like to get a bump. It's like 10, like maybe 10 sessions,
one out of 10
rolling
times
a die. Yeah. Well, it takes it takes you 10 successes in a particular direction to get the result of whatever path you've chosen, right? But at the end of each session, you roll a die, right? So you never really, you can't really, it's not going to happen in 10 sessions. The odds would be astounding, right? So it's like, who's ever getting towards one end or the other, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that's not precisely true, because you're always going to get an order rank unless you get a chaos rank. So you'll get something every session.
Oh, that's true. You need at least a corruption, at least one corruption. Yeah, that means the GM isn't doing his job. If nobody gets corrupted, I trust he'll be hard at work. Rex.
It's gonna depend on the choices. So and that's probably gonna be something that I'm probably going to underutilize. Not intentionally underutilize. I just suspect that I'm probably gonna be conservative about tossing the corruption around. Maybe not, now that I'm talking about it, putting it in front of my mind. Maybe I'll do it. And part of it is getting a handle on the phrase corruption. In my mind, I'm thinking, oh, well, that's when you're, you know, interacting with the unnatural and demonic. And it's not really that. It's basically when you're being a shitty human being.
Yep.
And,
yeah.
Making the poor selfish choice over the positive, societally beneficial choice.
There's this other RPG I run. As a bunch of making shitty choices. Hurtful.
God damn it, dude. Which you used to run. Let's just say that. How about that?
No, I'm still running it. I'm running it right now.
In your head?
Yeah.
Did you disinvite me?
I'm running away from it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it will continue.
Okay. One day.
Other questions, general comments? I don't want to get too deep in this until Jesse's in, but you know, if there's things that are puzzling you, or
I had a quick question. So for my character, part of him, you know, he's obviously this vigilante, but his alter ego, I never quite, you know, I wasn't sure, was I supposed to be completely destitute, or was I just like some low rung on a town ladder? I didn't know if I was supposed to be picturing him like homeless, living in like the rubbles of manors, or like a pickpocket on the street. I wasn't sure what to think of his alter ego.
So from the write-up of the profession, or based on our conversations about your character?
Probably more.
Is it the rule book? Or
No, just more, because I think we sort of hammered out his background in Rocket. In the end, but that was sort of the Batman part of it. I wasn't sure what his Bruce Wayne, if he was just like a street urchin that sort of keeps his ear to the ground, or if he like,
right.
It was part of like how we were talking about how we all know each other. I wasn't sure.
I think we can hammer that out. I don't think it's, necessarily set. And it's interesting because this profession is right out of the gate, you know, a smarter GM might have said, you know what, we're not going to have any vigilantes the first time we run this game, because it really is the way it's constructed, a little challenging for me to wrap my head around about what they're trying to do with this. But my thought is, you're lowborn, so I assume you probably have some, you know, subsistence level function in a, you know, 1600s small German, you know, river port town. What that can be, you can flesh that out, and how you know the other people in the party. But that's your day gig, whatever that might be. And then you do the vigilante thing, you know, when you do the vigilante thing. So, but in my mind, you're not walking around the town in your fox mask, you know?
Right.
Yeah, hey, so maybe... look, Batman's having lunch at my restaurant today. Let's get his picture.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the thing. Maybe, yeah, maybe I just work at a dock on the river or something, just something very innocuous.
Yeah, would certainly explain how you would know Duck's character, Bertolt.
Bertolt. Mm-hmm. Bertolt is a boatman.
Yeah.
Makes sense. What was Jesse's guy again?
He is Casper Fritzen. He is a gamekeeper.
Oh, right, right, the gamekeeper. Okay.
So he patrols some of the nobility's, you know, private reserves of for hunting locally, and ends up coming into town for a reason that we will explain shortly when he is with us. So I'm not sure if I actually answered your question, Art, but
No, be able to picture. Yeah, I work at the dock. You know, I just have some low, meaningless job. That's good enough.
Probably what's going to be interesting is Crack's character. He's going to kind of be the hardest fit into the group, and potentially has the greatest potential to just say, "Hey, I'm out of here. These aren't my problems." So,
yeah,
it depends on how much fun he wants to have. So,
my alignment here is independence and rebellion too, right? So, if you know, it's gonna be tough to just go along, right? If I'm gonna be that guy,
right?
But I don't want to be that guy. So. I'll find a way.
Well, you know, independence can mean a lot of different things. So, you know, maybe independence just means ultimately you want to be your own boss. That doesn't mean you can't work with people. You just have to make sure that they understand that they're not the boss of you. So, maybe a chance for you to become a leader. You know?
Wow.
The vistas of middle management are wide open.
We could put as many as four, and I'm putting my four fingers up. Four men directly under you, C-Rack.
That's what I've always wanted.
Start up.
Caleb, any questions about Volker Sauer?
Not too many that I can think of off the top of my head. I'm probably going to figure him out, and given the situation, because I know I'm like a barber surgeon, which my understanding is just like the commoner's medical man.
You are precisely correct. So, and potentially also their hairstylist. So, you know, you can kind of be a one-stop shop for all of their health and beauty needs. So, yeah, I would assume that he is connected to the town. Really, I'm just thinking that Crack's character, the big news, is probably the only quote unquote out of towner. Although, if you want Volker to be an out of towner, that's fine. It just may push or stretch a little bit of the why would you help these other guys out? Although there could be some reasons why you're going to want to help them out.
I think these have been answered, but like, this is a zero fantasy environment, right?
It is zero fantasy from the point of view of your characters at this moment in time. So there are no wizard colleges, there are no you know, magic guilds, there's no shop where you can go buy spells and scrolls and things of that nature.
Right. These dudes believe in like a higher power across the board. There are alchemists, that sort of thing.
There certainly are, you know, anything that you could have run into in the 1620s, you could certainly expect to run into. And on the little splash screen I've got up in Roll20, like the first image I have there is this, you know, meteor shower impact in 1607. And I don't have a clever name for it yet. Maybe you guys can come up with a clever, historically appropriate name for it. But certainly there are people who say that that event has changed something or unlocked something, or, you know, it was of the devil, and now devils and witches are loose in the world because of that incident. Of course, other people will say that was the judgment of God on unbelievers, you know, the different places that were hit by those you know, meteor fragments and meteor showers. You know, they deserved that punishment for something they had done, some failing of theirs. So there's a lot of debate about, you know, that event. But it's not like that event happened and the next day you saw someone flying around on a broom and casting fireballs out of a wand or anything. So there's, from the view of these characters, there's no known obvious magic in the world.
Latin chat. Here we go.
ducks at work. So
that's Latin for devil's comet.
Oh, nice. It takes so long to say anything in that language.
Yeah.
Now
letters stick together.
And I would not anticipate this one shot really having any meaningful opportunity for quote unquote magic or the more fantastic elements to occur. And then just depending on what everyone's thoughts are about, you know, playing a long-term game, you know, one of the things I would have a session zero for that, unless everybody just absolutely wanted to carry on with the exact characters they had and the exact storyline we kind of end up with when this is done. We can talk about, you know, what it would be to be a character that had some kind of access to otherworldly things. It's a rule book, you know, the implied setting from the rule book very much has a, sure, there's magic, and that's a great way to get burned alive or hung or drowned, is for people to figure out that you use magic. So there's, even within the implied setting of the rules, it's not a high fantasy situation, right? Yep. Where, you know, oh, you're a magician and you're part of the Magicians Guild and these magicians over there, the rival Magicians Guild and blah, 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 blah. It's, if you dabble in magic, that's a good way to have most people hate you and fear you and do what they do when they hate and fear things.
Open a dialogue.
Exactly.
With fire. Exactly.
Create a focus group. So,
pan over to a person burning a stake.
Yep. Yep. So, Kayla, does that give you some sense of where this is?
Yeah, that totally clears it up.
Yeah. Okay. Good. And again, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed. I have some ideas if this turns into a thing about, you know, what magic is, how it may be connected to that 1607 event, and how the powers that be would react to the fact that this event may have changed some fundamental things. But that would be stuff, in my mind, the ideal way would be for y'all to explore that and find that out through play. But again, I'm not necessarily opposed to a character, if someone wanted to create a character that had the ability to access that stuff from the beginning. So that would just be a, I didn't want to throw it in for the purposes of this one shot.
Oh yeah, the if it's anything like second edition Warhammer, it's a whole another subsystem.
Yeah, it's and it's it would be a situation where I'd kind of offload some of that to the player and make that their responsibility. So I definitely would not feel comfortable if somebody said, "Oh well, you know, I really really want to play somebody who can cast some spells." It's a little bit like Dungeon Crawl Classics to the extent that, you know, there is this spell list and the spells have, you know, very specific, you know, things you need to cast them and effects. You know, and of course they sell spell cards and all that kind of stuff, you know, as a product to support the game. But there's enough there. I don't think it's probably as complex as what was originally in Warhammer Fantasy. But there's enough there that if somebody wants to do that, then I would expect them to kind of get up to speed with that so that I did not have to help them through.
Gotcha.
Magic either. So.
Okay.
Then the great thing is you can cheat because I don't actually know what you're doing. So. Like, oh yeah, this rolls 27 D10s. That's how that works for damage. Yeah, that's no, trust me.
That's reasonable.
It's like everyone dies.
Okay.
Ooh, I like that second one.
Yeah, that's German. German's good at making compound words out of anything. Tufelskammet.
Yes. Tufelskammet.
That's for it.
Yeah, that could be a winner. Don't let that disappear.
Oh, Jesus. I take no responsibility.
Put your character sheet somewhere. So,
All right.
Other questions? Comments for the good of the order?
How about this?
Oh, I guess my... This is just a, like, someone who's better at the history. What's black powder like right now? Is it kind of like knights sort of situation where unless you're, like, a part of a army or a like nobility, you probably can't get a hold of a pistol.
I would say it's not quite that restricted. This is at a point in time where the armies of the day very much are mixed. Typically, the infantry formations are mixed formations of arquebusier and pikemen. And one of the challenges during the 30 Years' War was kind of the beginning of the transition away from those being two distinct roles within infantry.
Gotcha.
Cavalry also had, you know, pretty common for them to have multiple gunpowder weapons.
I guess
so.
They have two pistols. Play some musket and pike, man. It's a good series.
At least, yeah.
No, yep. They carry two pistols in musket and pike. You can shoot them twice, and then they have to reload.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. That's my two point list.
Some of them have little carbines too.
Yeah. They do, but generally in the game.
Yeah. I would look at that from like I'm a commoner. How hard is it for me to like possess a flintlock in this setting? Or a wheel lock. I forgot if it's what they're shooting around.
Wheel lock and matchlock is probably the most common. I'm not sure exactly when the flintlock started. It was sometime in this general time frame. And they actually called them firelocks originally, at least that's what they called them in England. Because there wasn't a constant burning match.
Gotcha.
They actually used the flint, and so those guys would guard the gunpowder because they were less worried about them actually blowing the gunpowder up with a lit match standing next to it the whole time.
I don't know if anyone knew or not, like what the economics were around that. Because the reason I ask is because when we played the Warhammer, it was like, as soon as someone found a pistol, it was like freaking finding a +2 sword or something. We're just like, oh, we have a pistol. We can finally not run from the rat ogre. We can just shoot it with the pistol.
Yeah. I can't remember what the gold cost is of a pistol. I would say that, you know, for a true commoner who has no connection to the military, it's probably unlikely that they're going to have a gunpowder weapon.
Gotcha.
You know, when I was doing Jesse's character, his gamekeeper trappings, I don't think there was an option for any type of firearm. It was a bow and arrow or a fire hardened spear were his options as weapons. So, in fact, I don't even know. Crack, your sellsword doesn't have a firearm, does he?
No, I got a spear and a sword. And I was just about to ask you, what do you think I was doing? You think I'm in what kind of mercenary company am I in?
Well, my thought is, given your particular chaos and order alignment, that you were in this Polish mercenary regiment that was raised to support the empire, and maybe you even fought at the Battle of White Mountain, and somewhere along the way you had a falling out with your commander of your mercenary regiment.
Yeah.
And so here, going to take some harsh action.
In the thing you wrote, it said that the company was actually disbanded. Like the whole company was discharged.
Sure. That works.
Yep.
Unless you have a better idea.
No, maybe I like my thought. I'm just wondering, because I'm not super familiar with the Western warfare that was going on during this time, mm-hmm. right? So, like, do you think I was walking around with a pike or riding around on a horse? I don't know. What was I doing?
I gave you riding, so I think you probably were originally in some type of mercenary cavalry, troop. Okay.
All right, I'll go with that.
You know, because I'm pretty sure I actually changed your profession, because riding is not. Go ahead. Riding is not normally your profession, but I.
Sorry, keep talking over you.
That's fine.
Everybody, one time. No, I'm sorry.
So you're saying riding is not normally in my profession?
Correct.
Yeah.
And so to fit your character concept, which I concede was just as much my concept as it was as yours, I said you have riding. So, but you don't currently have a horse.
Yes. So. It's a sad situation. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to ride anywhere, though, based on the kind of story you were telling pregame. Also, just ride away. This is not looking good.
Well, think about all the time you could spend working on GURPS after you ride out of the adventure. So.
Exactly. I'd have to go quickly, though. It seems like the way is blocked.
My thought was you basically drifted west to the Rhine, trying to figure out what you were going to do. Maybe you end up in a situation where you're out of money and you sold your horse to come up with a bit of money to survive while you were trying to figure out a place to land and your next job. And that's how you ended up in Bad Kreuznach. So it's kind of where you kind of hit the end of the line and you don't really have the resources to go much further is my thought about why you were in the town at this point in time. So maybe hoping to get on with the local lords, small force that he has, but your background didn't really help you very much with that. So they weren't really hiring. And
I've been there.
I'm gonna rock at Jesse and see if.
He did. He did make a response today, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Now he said he was going to be a bit late.
This seems more than a bit.
This is going to be some scintillating listening, by the way.
Well, you usually trim this stuff out, man. I think it's interesting getting, it's kind of session zero-y.
Yeah, it's very session zero-y, which I'm fine with. So.
Right. There's session zeros are always a tough thing for listeners.
Right.
So, you know, you can just skip, or you can cut it out, you know.
Here's a response from Jess.
Reader Barrera situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a couple of session zeros or friends at the table where I was like, ah, I'm not going to listen to this. I'm just going to move on to the series.
Sure. Yeah, that's why it's there. But nobody's got a gun to your head.
Yeah.
So Jesse's saying, no idea. Please start without me. So what are y'all's reactions to that?
Well, I think if we're going to do a session zero, I wouldn't mind just goofing around a little since we're all on here. And we can do some connection stuff and bring Jesse in if he joins later or next week, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
I'm solid with
that. I mean, if we get our figured out, like, why we're all here and why we wouldn't immediately just go our separate ways, I think that's going to be pretty solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I hate Catholics with a cold-hearted passion.
Nice.
Fortunately for you, I'm a Calvinist, so...
No, but somebody's a Catholic. C-Rack's a Catholic, isn't he?
Of course I'm a Catholic.
Yes. And I'm also saying that because my wife is in the office. She's giving me dirty looks.
Nice. Actually, so, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I just want to double... I pictured my characters being Catholic, and then when we were talking about his background, I'm going after... let me see if I can find that real quick. Okay, so the target of my vigilantism is Catholics. It says the Protestant authorities did not seem overly interested. So I assume I'm Catholic, but I was burned by them. So, or I guess one question I have, are we in a Protestant area of Germany?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, but it's, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how much, you obviously haven't done the background reading.
Maybe not for long.
Not for long.
Yeah. So,
are these my brothers at the gates of this town? Is that what's going on here?
Right.
Apparently. Bastard.
So let me do my prefatory stuff. Because I don't think Jesse would... I think Jesse would have a handle on a lot of this stuff. So, yeah. So here's the prefatory stuff. First, this is a grim, dark game. And we have set it in a period of history that was thoroughly nasty. Bigotry and fear and xenophobia and cruelty were fairly commonplace. And when I set a game in a historical situation, I try to give a sense for the history. So number one, I'm not endorsing any of the things that may be, presented in the game as, oh, those are the good old days. That's what we did now. We wouldn't have these problems. And it's also possible that, and this is probably more for people who might listen to this, necessarily than the players, because we've been chatting in Rocket and anyone listening would not have the benefit of that. It's possible that situations are going to play out in the game that could be analogized to situations that might be happening in real life now. It's not intentional on my part. I'm not trying to make any commentary or, make a point with that. I'm not that smart or that creative. It just, history sometimes repeats itself. So, if there's any particular grim, darky stuff that you would really not care to role play, feel free to tell me. I think if I remember when I raised this issue before, Jesse said kid stuff, which I wanted to talk to him about to make sure I understood the parameters of that. So, So if there's anybody who's like, just, you know, like body horror stuff is just not really something I'm into, so I'd really not spend time with that, or...
What's your definition of body horror?
Well, I don't... Gross stuff, you know, like really intense descriptions of, you know...
Okay.
Pustules oozing on bodies and things like that. I don't think that'd be an issue for anyone. I will tell you that I've never been super comfortable with sexually explicit stuff in games. Not because I'm triggered by it. I have this, you know, I grew up Southern Baptist and, you know, very puritanical view of the world. And I just, some of that stuff's ingrained in me. I just don't talk about that stuff. So if you're hoping, you know, for some softcore, you know, porn type role playing, you're going to have to probably get in one of the Ducks games, you know, Oddity High or something.
Well, I was about to ask, where do I go for that?
Yeah. Or Numenera says maybe you didn't do that on purpose, but.
Well, no, but in Numenera, that's probably about as far as I would go. If anybody who ever listened to that.
I would never want to go any farther. No, we're always going to fade to black. And also, I say let's just stay away from that because in this time period, it's going to veer into stuff I would not. You know, I don't know that there's a lot of loving stuff in this time period. So let's just take that off the table.
Sure. It's going to be...
with a town being sacked and all that.
Yes. And so typically what I would do with that is, you know, potentially you might hear somebody talking about what happened or alluding to what happened.
Yeah, we don't have to say it never happens. It's not saying a fantasy world, but let's stay away from explicit, you know.
Yeah, I'm good with that. So
yeah, I think every character I ever role play is going to hate that. So no matter what their actual character is, if you want to kill me, you can put me in that situation and I'll do it.
Right. But if there was an NPC who was as part of them being a bad dude.
Sure. Yeah. If you want me to do nothing except hunt that NPC down and kill them, then you can do that.
Yeah. So, and I don't know, has anybody else got anything that, you know, gosh, I really don't really want to role play this or that kind of situation or subject?
Nah, you covered all mine. Like,
okay.
I'm pretty free for all that stuff, so.
My safe word is pineapple.
Oh, Arthur, the safe word is always harder.
I can't remember. Have you guys played Blades? Or not?
Blades, no. Blades in the Dark?
Yeah.
Yeah. We did a exploratory session, me, Rex, and Jason.
Gotcha. That's the only time I've ever gotten to any, like, the, I guess, because there's a couple of vices or whatever.
Yeah, we did a session zero, so we really didn't get too far. So we never really got
to meet. We didn't do any downtime.
Meet. Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, I was just curious, because that's the only time, that's the only game where, that's not true, Pendragon also has that stuff come up once in a while. But our policy has always been fade to black.
I'm totally okay. Yeah.
But I mean, with the Pendragon, it's like ridiculous Excalibur romance shenanigans that we got up to.
So that's my broad preface. And then, so I specifically want to talk about religion. I think one of the things that's hard to role play now, because it's not necessarily a part and parcel of most people's life, is having religion as a central point of your identity without necessarily meaning that you're a devout person, but just like, you know, in this time you're a Catholic or you're a Protestant or you're a Lutheran. Or you're a Calvin, these were big central identity things. And again, not that doesn't mean that anyone's compelled to play in a certain way, because in this time frame, religion had very much been co-opted. There was a very strong interweaving between religious and secular authority. But it's important, like it's a big deal in many people's minds about that. So it's you know, kind of a way to think about it is, you know, if you're someone who's Catholic and you're in a Protestant area and people realize you're Catholic, that, you know, you're probably going to have a harder time with a lot of things. People are going to be less likely to trust you, you know, might shun you, might be leery of you. You know, certain authorities may make life difficult on you. So again, I'm not, trying to cast any particular aspersions on any particular subdivision of Christianity as we go through this, but it is an important thing. And so I would, it may in your mind be like, man, you just talk about this religion stuff all the time. I'm trying to instill that, like, this was how people thought and this is how people divided up lines. So again, I didn't think there was anyone who's going to be necessarily too worked up about that, but I thought I should just address it.
I am all about it. Like, I am super hyped to have Protestants and Catholics and the other 8 billion dominations Martin Luther created show up and play around.
Nice. Okay. That's good. So,
yeah, I mean, if you're at all familiar with the 30 years war, I mean, the whole war was basically about, I mean, obviously politics and people jockeying for power was really what it was about. But for the common man, it was all religion.
Yeah. So,
what do you, speaking of on that, and like a one-liner is perfectly fine for this. I'm still trying to figure out what the heck a Calvinist is, because I Googled it and I was just like, I kind of get this.
So, gosh, one-line Calvinism. Like, this is, I'm going to get in so much trouble. You know, if our Calvinist listeners at home are going to write nasty emails to Dave. John Calvin was probably the next big early Reformation religious leader after Martin Luther. And if you probably in my mind, the easiest way to look at it is, you know, Martin Luther really wanted to reform the Catholic Church. He was very much a, like, this is great. And in one church, that's all wonderful, but this system is broken. And we're not really doing God's work, and so we need to clean up the place. And that was really his goal. And when at the point in time that he couldn't succeed at that, then he basically broke away, and the Lutheran Church was basically a cleaned up version of the Catholic Church, at least initially coming out of the gate. And Calvin came along and said, you know, this is really just more the same problem. And Calvin had a much more radical view of the individual's relationship with God. And he was big on predestination and the quote unquote elect. And so Calvinists tended.
Dude, it's all about the bread. Come on.
So Calvinists ended up.
Because when I read about that, is he. And sorry, this is more of an ideology than religion, like fatalism. Like, it's kind of like a Christian fatalism. And if I'm offending
you, sure, that's one way to. Yeah, that's
how it read to me.
A good way to look at it. And so when you have a situation where you feel like you have the one true understanding, and you are elect, you're in. No doubt about it. You are elect. That gives you a lot of latitude in how you deal with everybody else. So the analog now is, you know, the Calvinists are the radicals. Many Calvinists see the Lutheran Church as just as big a problem as the Catholic Church, because in their mind, it still puts this level of bureaucratic authority between the individual and God. So Calvinists are much more, no, it's you and God. You have that direct relationship. You don't need all the other people. So there, in leading up to this time, there were some really nasty Calvinist-Lutheran conflicts. because in some ways it was the, you know, they're more upset with these people for deviating from the Reformation than they are with the Catholics. So, gotcha. And that's one of my, yeah. So with that broad background, you guys asked about where we are. Where you guys are is in the Palatinate, which was a holding of Frederick or Friedrich IV, who is the Elector Palatinate, who accepted, and actually if you go back to our splash screen, it tells you a little bit of this. So there's your map of the Holy Roman Empire. So let's go over here. You see where I am pinging?
Yeah.
I guess technically. So that's where the Palatinate's located. So actually, it was Frederick V. So way over here in Bohemia, when Ferdinand II becomes the Holy Roman Emperor, he starts cracking down and trying to reverse the Peace of Augsburg, where basically the Protestants and Catholics said, okay, let's quit fighting. Let's kind of draw some lines here and let's have some rules about how this is going to work going forward. So he was trying to basically recut the deal. And the people he installed to run Bohemia were unpopular, evidenced by the fact that they then got thrown out of a window.
Defenestrated.
By the locals. Yep. And Bohemia revolted, and they rejected Ferdinand as their king, and they invited Frederick from the Palatinate to be their king. And he unwisely, to some people, accepted. And now turned this into kind of a war across the Holy Roman Empire. So the Catholic army ends up winning the Battle of White Mountain over here in Bohemia. Frederick flees. And this time over here, see where I'm pinging now on the map? Can I see?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
This is the Spanish Netherlands. Spain, as in the other Habsburg power, arm in arm with Ferdinand II, sent their army in to occupy the Palatinate. And that's kind of the setting that we're in. So you're in a Protestant region. It's been Protestant for, you know, probably 60, 70 years. And so part of what that means is when the Reformation came, you know, all of these Catholic churches and abbeys and monasteries in these Protestant regions basically got new ownership and new management. You know, sometimes it was as simple as, you know, the local clergy, you know, taking off this uniform, putting on that uniform, and, you know, what are we supposed to say now? Sometimes it was a little more pronounced than that. But these now, in these places, from an official point of view, they're all Protestant regions. The area where you are is a Protestant region. The Lutheran Church is the establishment church. There's tension with the Calvinists. There are still individuals who are Catholic who reside in these places. It's just because they're Catholic, in some ways, they're second-class citizens. You know, they probably aren't going to hold any political power. It's possible that, you know, their land may be subject to harsher taxes or attempts to forfeit it, things of that nature. But there are some people who've kept their faith, their Catholic faith, and they're awaiting and hoping that, you know, one day things will change and the Catholic Church will be back. And the Catholic Church is hoping that one day things are going to change. And because they got a list of like all this stuff they lost, and they would like it back. So in Spain's a hardcore Catholic power, they're perfectly fine helping the Catholic Church reacquire what it lost. So that's kind of the background of where you guys are in general with bad Kruznach. town on the Na River, which is a tributary that runs into the Rhine. So, questions about the background?
It's clear to me. I am also now interested about how we're going to get along.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If I may add one grimdark detail to the Battle of White Mountain, that was the Catholic kind of turning point there, and the Pope died during the victory parade while he was leading it. So that's nice. Like straight out of a 40K novel.
Excellent.
Yep.
So Bad Kreuznach is this small town. Again, it's on a tributary of the Rhine that flows into the Rhine. And the Rhine at this time is, even at this point in time, is a massively economically valuable area because of the Rhine River trade to the ports with the North Sea and all the trade that flows from there. So having control of the Rhine, whoever has control of the Rhine, they certainly get economic benefits. There's some military benefits to controlling the Rhine as well, because it's, again, it's basically a highway for you to move things.
It's like Jesse's out.
So,
oh well.
Well, we'll just session zero it, and then I'll catch him up during the week, and we will hit the gas running.
Yeah.
Well, this won't be up in a week, that's for sure.
We can put it somewhere he can download it if we want.
You can just send him a link to the.
Well, yeah. If you want to make him mix it himself, sure.
So let's go back over here. Bad Kreuznach is an old, originally a Roman town, and it sits astride the Na River, as I said. You'll notice that the picture on the page we're still on. See what I'm pinging up there? Chelsea?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay, yeah. So that's the castle, the Kausenburg Castle, and it's on the high ground. It's an older castle. It's probably not a particularly impressive military position in the gunpowder age, but it's still where the local lord is seated, and it kind of overlooks the town, and the town has developed over time, mostly due to river commerce. And the town itself is lower down here where you can see. I couldn't find a usable map of the town, so I ended up kind of, let's do this. Oops, I need to move you guys over here. So what I did is I just kind of took a bunch of different pictures and made a crude layout of kind of the important parts of the town for what we're going to do. So can y'all see that?
Very nice.
Definitely, yeah.
So at the top, again, is this kind of hill with the Kausenburg Castle on it. That's where the local lord stays. And then there's some walls that run the perimeter. And these two thin blue lines are the Na River. It splits, as you see, and there's kind of an island area in between. And then the main town is down in this area. And I've, again, just kind of put points of interest that are going to come up in the scenario. I haven't tried to fill it in. I may work on this a little bit more during the week. So originally, when we made characters, in my mind, let me get over on the character list. Casper, Jesse's character, and Bertolt, Duck's character, were definitely from the town. And then I was kind of open on who else would be from the town. I was pretty sure it was Big New, Crack's character, was not from the town.
That would be.
And we've worked on that a little bit more now. So, so Bertolt, why don't you tell us a little bit about your character? And then I may add some details because I'm not sure how much I got on your character sheet when I did it.
Okay. My name is Bertolt Groman. As Rex said, I am a local. Bertolt is a very salt of the earth. He is, in fact, a commoner in every way, I think. I don't think he could be more common. His social class is lowborn. Do you want us to share our order and chaos alignments? I could describe. I mean, if you meet Bertolt, he's obviously, you know, he's a big guy. He's, you know, he's large for the time. He's over 6 feet tall. He's also not thin. So he's, you know, he is a presence. He's got a lot of hair. He probably has, you know, face is a little like kind of puffy, and his eye, you know, he's kind of got those like black eyes. So, and you look at him and you can just sense, like barely restrained violence. You know, he can be passionate and, ferocious, if you want to figure out which alignment that is. But you know, oftentimes, as Yoda said, that leads to suffer. That leads to hate. So you know that ferocity can turn into hatred.
Right.
So you know, he's a big, rough guy. He's a boatman. Works with his hands. Probably knows how to do a boat around. He's Lutheran, local. You know, has the standard "that's my team" kind of perception of religion. You know, which is a pretty strong human tribal thing. But you know, he's not probably you know, he's not going to debate you about transubstantiation or anything like that. He's going to hit you in the face with his maul if he finds out you're a Catholic or a Calvinist.
Right. Even worse. Right. So if you look at the map of the town. Down here is a church orphanage. That's actually where Bertolt was raised. Right.
You did put background in. I should have read that too. Sorry, Rex. Your work.
That's okay.
Let me go. Yeah, my parents died of plague when I was 8 years old. And so I was raised in a Lutheran orphanage. So I work on the river. I work the river barges on the river, how do you say it? Nye? And the Rhine.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, I'm not one, if you want to joke about, like, because, you know, I'm probably a fairly ridiculous looking person, you know, with a lot of body hair. If you think that's funny to make a joke about, you know, I don't think dentists were very good in this day and age, so you might not want to joke about
that. Yeah. Yep. Don't make him angry. I think that would probably be,
yes, you wouldn't like him when he's angry.
On him.
Writing this
exactly.
down.
Yep. So I will tell you guys about Casper because my thought is we'll kind of go through who all the characters are, mm-hmm. and after everybody's kind of heard who the characters are, then potentially y'all can maybe weave together how it is that, that y'all came together. And again, I have some ideas to backstop. I don't know how you want to do it. So Casper is also local. His mother works in the Kausenberg, the castle up on the hill. She's a servant for the Lord. And I'll actually tell you his name because I actually made some notes. The local Lord is... Ledick von Ballingen. No, he's not. I lied. That's another character that you might meet. Ah, Gerhard von Kausenberg, unsurprisingly and unshockingly. He's a local lord. His family's had the lordship for, you know, many generations. And so Jesse's character's mother works there. His character's father? Well, no one really knows who his father is. His character has gotten some information from his mom, but I'll leave that up to Jesse to decide whether his character shares that or not. But he works for Lord von Kalsenberg, tending to one of his hunting preserves out of town. So he spends a lot of his time out of town, but he does because his mother works at the Kalsenberg Castle. He does come to town from time to time and interact with people, but he's probably out in the woods doing his thing, weeks at a time, and then comes to town for a few days, and then he's back out for weeks at a time. He's a big guy as well. 6'1", husky. He's not slender. He's got kind of light brown, olive-y brown skin, so he's kind of rare in a German town. Some people have speculated his father may be a Spaniard, but that's not something he would ever probably confirm or share with you. So that's kind of his feeling. He's a gamekeeper. Let's see what else you guys might be able to know about him. Probably those of you who've interacted with him would get a sense that he's lowborn, but he seems to take some pride in the fact that he's got some connection to the Lord through his mom working at the Kalsenberg. And it's kind of puzzling to everybody else why he's so proud of that. She's a servant at the castle. Ooh, big deal. But he seems to take a lot of pride in it. Sometimes kind of annoyingly proud, bordering on insolent. Some people might say arrogant at times. So that's his character. Why don't we go to Caleb and have him tell us about Volker Sauer?
So, probably a little lightweight on my side. One thing about Volker is he is probably a little too clever for his own good based on my stats. He's fairly smart and he's good at talking. Social class is a burger, which I think is like, is that middle class?
Yes, very much.
I would say I'm from this town, but I don't know, so like, I guess, do I need to be... I like the idea of Calvinist. Would there be Calvinist around?
Sure.
Or would I keep that close to the chest? Because I was thinking maybe I keep that close to the chest or I'm not, like, out barking at people. But I have, like, my beliefs. But I know you said radical.
Yeah, I would say that it's not uncommon. There are places, Switzerland was one of the hotbeds of Calvinism, and the Dutch Republic was another, but it did spread through Germany. In fact, sometimes it would be a big point of contention if one of the local lords or a king or a prince converted and became a Calvinist. So it did happen, and my inference from that is if that happened, it meant that there were Calvinists around, whispering in his ear and this, that, and the other. So I think it's a fair point that there could be Calvinists living in the town, and they're not going to be run out of town on a rail. There's, again, probably going to be somewhat second-class citizens when it comes to certain issues, and they'll probably be accepted to keep their mouth shut and attend Lutheran services the way they're supposed to and what they do on their own time when they read the Bible and engage in their heresy. That's what they're going to do on their own time. So So you can have it be a secret if you want.
I just probably don't like. I gotta say, I'm not more on the more active side right now, at least.
Sure. You're pretty young, so that makes sense.
I'm a baby. But a very skilled baby. Yeah. So I'm 17. I'm going to say I'm fairly small. I didn't see where to plug in size stats.
There is a table for everything in Zweihander. There were some tables where you could roll and find out what your height and weight were and your build. So it's not a big deal. We can follow up with that.
Cool. But yeah, on the young side, and I'd say the big thing about him is, and maybe that's what he's able to leverage a little bit, is he's very cunning, if not deceitful sometimes, for his alignments.
Sure.
And, but he's probably still trying to like play all this out as
sure.
a local situation while being, I guess, would I be the only physician in town, or would there be a couple of us?
I would think that there is probably at least one physician that caters to the aristocrats and the more wealthy burghers. And just as another kind of background snippet, the burgher class really was the mercantile class that, as trade began to develop in the Renaissance, you know, these were the people that were involved in shipping and in light industry and the making of money beyond just owning a piece of land. And in fact, oftentimes the big difference is, burghers don't really have land holdings the way an aristocrat would have. They own property, but they're very much a mercantile class. And there's a tension between the aristocrats and the burghers, because the aristocrats, they know they need the burghers on some level, but they fear that these people are just not.
We're proto-bourgeoisie.
Yes, exactly. They just aren't the kind of people that should be in charge of things and making decisions, because they're good at the money, dirty money thing that they do. And it's tough because the aristocrats really need that money. In fact, they will borrow that money from burghers. And then periodically they'll accuse the burghers of terrible things in ways in efforts to get out of the debts they have. But, that's a different issue. So, it's not a great time. So I think you probably... your clientele, particularly given your age, you're probably catering to the lower class, and potentially you have some burger clientele.
Yeah, and I know I had a militant upbringing, so given my other relations, where would that probably line me up to?
I'm sorry, say that again.
As a militant upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to...
Go ahead.
Oh, no, you go ahead.
So when I saw that, that's what caused me to suggest that you're probably a Calvinist, because they're very militant. And militant doesn't necessarily mean military. It just means, very outspoken and very, sure of the way the world works. Here, let me see if I can find the...
Sick. Okay, that actually lines up with how this guy kind of got built out, I think.
Yeah, let me see if I can find that background thing. Bring in. Here we go. A militant background. Rote and discipline has ruled your life and hardened you. Your family traces your lineage down a long line of soldiers, generals, and sappers. And more of your ancestors met their death at the end of a sword than in a sick bed. You have nursed many a beating in your bed, taught these same harsh lessons by the bellicose figures in your life. So my one twist on it is, the militancy had more to do with your Calvinist, you know, upbringing than it did necessarily the long line of storied military officers. You gotcha. Could still have that in your background, but really what made it militant was your parents' just obsessive commitment to, you know, for them, a newfound, you know, Calvinist faith, and they were going to make sure that their children were properly raised to go out and fight the fight for Calvinism.
Okay.
So, see if there's anything else about your character that we should know at this point. No, I don't think so. Yeah.
Let me see here. No, not particularly. I'd say the biggest thing to know about me is that maybe I'm like a new kid on the block in that sense, because with my age, but you'll quickly find out that I'm pretty sharp.
Yeah, nice. And I'm thinking, looking at the map, that you probably attended this college that I have.
Yeah, that's when I brought up the map, that's where my brain went to.
Yeah. So, all right. So I think Art's back.
Oops. Yeah. And I guess like I'd have to look at the clothes. I don't wear like fancy clothes, but I don't wear like, it's like I'm very clean cut, but it's not fancy is what I would go for as far as like my look.
Yeah. Well, you know, some of the colleges are starting to teach about the importance of purifying yourself to make sure that unholy spirits don't interfere with your ministrations to the sick. So,
yeah, I'm on that side.
So some barber surgeons actually wash their hands now to make sure that there are not unholy spirits from their last interaction waiting to leap into the bodies of their next client.
That's so good.
Okay. Hen Norler is up to tell us as much of his story as he's willing to tell.
All right. My guy's name is Hen Norler. Let me see the Tinder details. He's pretty average build, pretty average height. His background sort of starts when he was a little kid. He was a sickly kid. He has bad lungs. So probably as a child, he had some kind of pneumonia or something and never fully recovered. His father was, did we say he was executed? Or I know he had his hands chopped off.
That's up to you. He at least had his hands chopped off.
Yeah. So I figured, maybe he was made a very stiff example of. So maybe, yeah, they chopped his hands off and then they killed him. For thievery, we were starving. He probably went on to the local lord's land, desperate for food. And that's what they did to him. And so he was executed and all of his children were branded as thieves, sort of to add humiliation onto the punishment. Just so we would all be known as the sort of disgusting filth that they wanted us to believe we were. So
I don't think the other players fully grasp what you mean when you say you and the rest of the kids were branded.
Yeah. So
on Rocket. I know, but go ahead.
Okay.
We were labeled branded as thieves on our faces. Mm-hmm. So it's big as day right there in the middle of our forehead. That's sort of how I was picturing it. Mm-hmm. It's unmistakable. You can't not see it. It's a true disfigurement that I could probably cover up with longer hair or something. So, but maybe I don't quite. I think there's a part of me that wants to see it as sort of a reminder of what I'm doing. So my mother, desperate to try and keep us all alive, she ends up in humiliating fashion having to work for the people that did that to us, to her husband and to her children. I grow up sort of with a daily reminder of what happened to our family and being unable to do anything about it. Based on some of the things you were saying, Rex, let me, and obviously squash any of this if it's not making any sense, but some of the stuff you were saying about how, like, you know, families would be Catholic but then flip to Protestant, I'm starting to sort of picture this family as one of those families that was a prominent Catholic family that flipped because they just wanted to hold on to influence. And maybe that's why the Protestant church maybe overlooked what they did to us a little bit. But I know, because I was trying to, sort of connect the dots when my vigilantism was against Catholics, but we're in a Protestant area of the country. And how did
my thinking, my thinking was that, like I said, part of the Peace of Augsburg, I believe, wasn't religious toleration per se. One of the principles was whatever the religion of the local leader was, that was the religion of the place. So if the local leader changed, then the place officially changed, but they didn't necessarily go root every single person out. They just basically said, we're all Lutherans now. And, you know, each individual might decide, well, okay, I'm not changing. So there are still Catholics residing throughout the Protestant lands. Some people have changed because that's the, you know, the team to be on if you want to be connected and go places and this, that, and the other. But some people are stubborn. So, you know, my original thinking was this was one of the stubborn, you know, Catholic lords.
Got it. Okay.
You know, and your vigilantism is not anti-Catholic. It's anti-noble, anti-aristocrat, but you're smart enough to know that if you start offing like Lutheran aristocrats,
right, they're going to be, yeah.
Then the authorities are going to care and start actually expending resources to figure out who you are and catch you.
Okay.
So that was my thinking.
Got it. Okay, that makes more sense. Yeah, so it's more about their social standing than their religion. It's just I don't touch one side because they're better connected. That
exactly
makes sense. Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so basically from that, I decided like I'd had enough at one point, and I try to exact some revenge on the family that took everything from us. I go and try to hurt the children of the lords. And in my process of trying not to be caught, I grab a mask from their house. Like foxes, there's a character that was popular back then, a red fox. So I pictured the kids having some kind of mask the way kids might idolize a story hero. And I grab that, do what I do, and I run away. So I pictured myself not being from this exact town, but being maybe from the general area, but I left and fled to the city to fall into obscurity, to get away from what I've done. But at the same time, I work at the docks. Maybe sometimes I see things and I use that information to continue to exact revenge against this class of people that stole everything from us.
And my thought was, because you said your character was going to be Catholic. So my thought was that on some level, you have some remorse or some guilt or maybe some corruption.
Is Catholic guilt a thing?
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Can confirm.
Yes, I know. I mean,
I'm planning my own guilt right now as we speak. Yeah,
I think he was being sarcastic.
I was, yeah.
So I'm thinking that's probably going to give you some corruption that you are harming good Catholics who happen to be bad people because of their social standing and their exploitation of pretty much everybody else. So.
That makes sense. Yeah. And then based on my order alignment, chaos alignment, part of how I was, you know, the way I was sort of picturing is this, obviously I'm solely focused on the ultimate goal. And I am willing to, maybe in my head, I think if I'm getting someone to help me, I'm leading them down a noble path, but I will also steer them right into a ditch if it gets me what I want. But I'm still thinking like, no, I'm doing them like a spiritual favor, even as they sort of go right into the fire, because it's just a terrible idea.
Nice.
Yeah.
My prediction of all the characters, your character is the one I'm most confident who's going to be dinging up the chaos alignment.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, when I was reading the vigilante background in the book, it's like, oh yeah, you know, examples of the various types of vigilantes covered by this definition in the book is, you know, Guy Fawkes. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Also Jack the Ripper. I was like, huh, that's a take I've never heard of for Jack the Ripper. But I sort of made me start thinking like, I could be crazy.
Oop, you still with us?
Did we lose him?
Oh.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
We're back. Sorry. Yeah, like just maybe
for some people. But
sorry, what parts did it cut out on?
Oh no, you got the Jack the Ripper out. I was going to say, like, for some people, vigilante is just this thing that leaves bodies in the streets they have to deal with.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had the same reaction when I read those names. I got Jack the Ripper. I never would have thought he was a vigilante, but I guess I'm not an expert on Ripperism, so maybe in fact he had some idea. So yeah, your character is well on the road to being dark, so which is awesome.
Grim dark.
Yeah,
exactly. I mean, is there more that I should be thinking about, or does that cover the basics well enough?
No, I think that's a pretty good handle. You're not actually a very big guy though, are you?
No, so it says here I thought I was supposed to be 5'6", but it changed the 6 into some like trademark symbol or something. But yeah, it's mid fives and 150 pounds. Yeah, I'm just a normal guy who can't breathe.
Right.
Tracks with the Fox aesthetic though.
Nice. Okay. And so that leaves us with the burner, the stranger.
Good try. I think this is going to be a running thing. So Zbigniew Grzmotkowski is a Pole who grew up as a middle-class burgher. And I don't know what his family was doing. Maybe they're some kind of merchants or something. But he wasn't low-born or high-born. And his family had the idea for him that he would continue along the family line. But for some godforsaken reason, he was kind of obsessed with war and fighting and horses and swords and spears and guns, like since he was a little kid. So he decided he was going to, you know, go off and join the local lord to go fight in some Polish Muscovite wars that were going on since basically he was born until about 1618. And not only did he go, but he convinced all of his burgher friends to go with him. So they had like a little crew that went into these wars. And they did well for themselves in the wars. But the wars ended. And instead of sitting back in the garrison and, just defending against nobody, like little did he know that the Turks were about to invade too. And I mean, talk about some foreigners. I mean, we have all these little Christian squabbles going on, but the Turks are coming, you know, and they're an entirely different kind of people. So he convinces his childhood gang of friends that they should go strike off on their own as independent contractors, and they should go find the next glorious fight to battle in. And which led them to eventually, after a few years, to this battle at White Mountain. And here it says they were fighting on the Imperial side. I guess that's just you could hire them. And Imperial would not be the Catholics, right?
No, Imperial would.
Oh, okay. All right, I'll fix that part. So anyway, so they join it. But he doesn't really care too much He doesn't really care too much who he's fighting for, as long as it's glorious. And that kind of, I don't know exactly why yet. I think maybe the Lord he was fighting for, he found out that that guy was particularly odious for any number of reasons. If it comes up, I'll think of it more. But, he was not impressed with the guy he was fighting for. But so he struck out and brought all his friends. And then in that battle, even though they won, that whole group of friends was killed. So he's feeling particularly guilty about this. And he doesn't really want to go back to Poland now. So I had to explain why he's going west, right? And
sure.
Could have been a whole bunch of things. Could have been some girl thing or whatever. But I think it's going to be because he doesn't want to have to go back home and explain to everybody who has been telling him for 20 years that you shouldn't be, going on this soldiering stuff, and you shouldn't be, bringing all the kids into it, and please just join the family business, and we're doing well for ourselves, and this is dangerous. And, so he kind of upset the entire neighborhood by bringing all his buddies to war, and then he got them all killed. So he doesn't want to have to go back and deal with being blamed for it, or have to explain to their mothers or whatever, all the trouble he's caused. So now he's, unfortunately, his company was disbanded after that battle. And now he is just looking for more work.
Nice. So that's who you guys are. Y'all want to spend some how you think you're connected to each other and why the scenario adventure will kick off ideally with everyone at this inn that I'm pinging?
So I can't imagine how I would know anybody here, but I will say that I just came back not long ago from, I don't know if this is how this works, but some interaction with the Lord, whether it was him himself in the castle or with some functionary of his, but trying to sign up, trying to get some work, and was rejected. So
maybe you ran into Jesse's mom there.
All right.
Well, I'm just throwing shit out there. I don't know. Yeah, you're going to be a tough one.
What does she do exactly there?
I don't know if we specified.
She works there. Well, actually, I will help you, potentially help you on that, because what I can tell you about Jesse's character, Casper Fritzen, is he was out doing his gamekeeper job, patrolling the forest, making sure nobody was poaching. And he actually encountered the advance guard of the Spanish army marching into the Palatinate. And so he hot-footed it back to Bad Kreuznach and went to the Kalsenberg, went up to the castle to make his report. And that was probably about the time that Zbigniew was getting the cold shoulder from entering service for the Lord. So, and Casper was a little put out because basically they took his report and they thanked him for his diligence. And then they basically told him to get out while they decided what it meant, because he had some ideas about essentially what should be happening and what done. And they're like, no, okay, thanks. But no, you've done a great job, gamekeeper. Now you move along. The important people will now decide what to do about this situation. So in my mind, I could see the two of y'all kind of cooling your heels, outside the Great Hall and making some kind of connection there. And my thought is that when Casper is in town, he typically frequents the inn's called the Lustrous Cloak. So. Mm. That'd be my guess as to why, or at least that's a way that you could end up being there.
All right.
Hey, Rex, if you get a chance, can you turn the other character sheets so we can see them?
Sure.
Not edit them, because then it's going to be hard for me to remember character names unless they show up.
Yeah. Yep, let me do that right now.
And then I don't know if this is a usual thing in Roll20, but I can't seem to make a journal.
I think Rex has to make one for you.
Okay.
Oh, okay. You have the GM roll.
Okay.
So, Duck, can you now see Volker Sauer?
Nope. I don't know if I need to refresh or anything.
Well, I hit show to players, but let me go ahead.
I think Roll20 can be funny.
Yeah. So let's do this. All right. So let's now see if
now I can see it.
Yep.
Okay. So I'll just go ahead and do that for everybody. And go here. Do that.
Oh, I need to get a picture.
You do need to get a picture. Thank you. So Bertolt, do you have any ideas on who you know, why you know them, and why you'd be at the Lustrous Cloak?
I mean, so Zbigniew's going to be hard. I could see myself knowing Volker because being a bargeman is a rough trade, and I've probably gone for his services. And he seemed, if he's not in your face about his Calvinism, devoutness is not Bertolt's thing. You know, it's just, if he thinks you're on his team, that's fine. Right. So if this is a guy who lives in Krasnach or whatever we are, and, he's got his barber shingle up and will sew Bertolt up when, he comes in all cut up from falling on the metal, falling on the metal shavings and stuff on the docks, or, his contusions or whatever, then, and so maybe he's had a drink or two with Volker. I think Casper, if they both grew up in the town, it seems like they would be, growing up in an orphanage, he's not gonna.
Yeah, so here's the weird thing. Where the random rolling sometimes kind of throws things off. Bertolt's 35, and Casper's 16, Volker's 17.
Okay.
I think Ken's
He wouldn't have grown up with any of these guys.
Yeah.
Maybe but if Casper's local, maybe for whatever, for let's come up with a reason. Maybe
so like retcon a little bit. I'm newish to my profession, right?
Right.
So I'm so young. Maybe you were like down at your docks and got injured, and there was like two other guys around, and they're like, "Oh, let's do this." And I was like, "They are going to permanently ruin his leg," and came over and like, "Get away," and like helped you out.
Sure.
And then you like, you know who I am now.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. I like it. Yeah, I didn't fully click on the different ages.
Which I'm fine just changing your age to make it work.
No, I kind of 35 is pretty fucking old, but I kind of like that. Let's see if we can work with it. So we got Volker, maybe so Casper is also pretty young. Maybe I knew Casper's mom.
That would make sense.
Yeah. Maybe she's a little bit older than. Not much older. Or maybe they grew up together. Maybe she was a couple years older than Bertolt. And she was obviously, if she's going to attract the attention of a noble, she's going to be good looking. So they kind of hung around, and he always kind of had a crush on her and was never realized. But they've maintained, but he always looked out for her, and when she was having tough times, and she didn't have her job at the castle, he would give them food to the household. So he's aware of
So, sure. It's kind of like he's an uncle. He's like Casper.
There you go. That's what I was thinking. Uncle Bertolt. Uncle makes Bertolt. Sense.
Yep. All right. Somebody else. Well, I think Caleb came in with some strong stuff, but what do you got, Art? Any ideas?
Let me see. So I figure you and I might know each other through work. If I'm working the docks.
Yeah.
So
now let me see. How old are you? Ahead.
I'm 25.
How old are you? Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not quite so young.
And how long have you been in town?
I would say, man, I probably did what I did to the local lord when I was in my pissed off teens.
Mm.
So maybe like 16, 17. So maybe I sort of wandered a little bit and finally made my way to the city late teens. So maybe a few years.
Mm-hmm.
If that works.
Sure.
So I don't know if this, something I was just thinking about based on, you know, the description you gave for Casper, for Jesse's character. I feel like his mom's boss might be my target.
Ooh.
And this is the part I feel bad about. I feel like he's the thing I don't know how to put this. Like, his situation has a lot of parallels to my situation, but mine was shit, but he is proud of
his. Out.
Yeah. So I feel like I would have some resentment, but I need to get to know him because I need to get through him to what I want. I don't know if that screws things up or if that makes any sense.
I think that makes things awesome.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it totally takes where this one shot's going in a potentially different direction.
It's up two.
No. It's so much better because I was just working off a canned, this is a way to teach people how to play as Wyander, you know? So, yeah, no, that's fantastic.
Okay.
Absolutely fantastic.
So I feel like knowing Bertolt, like Uncle Bertie, I would sort of get to know like the youngins.
Yeah. So you work on the docks. What do you do on the docks?
I feel like I'm definitely at the bottom. I don't know if I've got the stick that pulls barrels in off the ropes, or if I'm just, pulling shit off of the barges.
But you've got this big brand on your face. So how does that work?
I feel like, man, I guess, nobody would let me touch shit, would they? I feel like whatever that, it has to keep me at the bottom. Like, it's not like, you know, he's management material with that thing on his face. But, so I feel like I just keep my nose down and I work as hard as I can and try not to be noticed either way. And just sort of keep my ear to the ground as I do so. Yeah. Like if people are talking on the barge, like, hey, you know, this is, and I try and make sure I listen, or if I can overhear anything, eavesdrop, see two people meeting and I don't recognize one of them, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So could I make two suggestions?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So suggestion one is, after you did your first nefarious deed and you were basically fleeing, you actually ended up basically on Bertolt's barge. Like you basically fled to the little river port closest to where you did your deed, and like you were desperate to get out of there because you were freaked out about, you know, if people figure out I did this, it's going to come back on me. What are they going to do? And you like try to talk your way on the barge, and Bertolt figured out you had no idea what you're doing, but for some reason he just, you know, kind of felt the need to take you under his wing. And
you're making Bertolt be, I'm not really sure he's that nice a guy, but, all right, I'm just going to put that out there. There's got to be, maybe there was some money involved in it for him.
Could be. Sure. Yeah. Okay. For whatever reason, you ended up on Bertolt's barge.
I don't want him to be a softie.
Okay. You ended up on Bertolt's barge. and that's how you got to Bad Crew's Neck, and that's how you had that connection. So, yeah. And then my second suggestion is your job at the docks is like, whatever the 1620s equivalent of a janitor was, like you clean.
Yeah. Okay.
Like
yeah,
they don't let you handle cargo, and you don't have keys to the warehouse. You know, you just do the most menial task. I mean, sometimes you have to carry stuff. You know,
like, you're not allowed to work on your own. That kind of thing.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, those are my two suggestions. But otherwise, I think it works.
Cool. Yeah. Then yeah, those things definitely, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that kind of gives a reason why everybody would be at the Lustrous Cloak when the scenario kicked off. Trying to decide what to do with the last few minutes here. So here's kind of the background that y'all know. You know, you're at the Lustrous Cloak, and you know, Casper's sharing what he has, you know, reported to the Lord of von Kalsenberg. And I'm going to say that, you know, as you guys are there, you'll have realized that, like, there's a very small garrison of the local lord's, you know, personal troops stationed at Bad Crew's Neck. And they like marched the streets and told everyone that they need to stay off the streets. You know, the Spanish army's coming and there's going to be a siege. And that's kind of where, when you guys pick up, that's the situation you're going to be immediately dealing with, is that you've just become aware that, in fact, the city is going to be placed under siege. So, questions, comments, other things that we could cover at this point?
I guess for me personally, no.
My only one is like, how are you on like players creating NPCs? I don't even know if it's got mechanics for that.
Give me an example of a situation where you created an NPC. So I understand what you're talking about.
Lustrous Cloak, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called?
Yes.
I was just like, why would I be there? And like, of course, to get a drink and such. But I was trying to think of other reasons. And maybe like, I have a couple of Calvinist Bibles, and I just like decided as like a fun one to like, I'm gonna give the staff of this place these Bibles, and try to like, see what that does, or have some like weird policies. I was thinking of like trying to figure out some of the staff to build a relationship with, like maybe the hostess or whatever would be like, hey, let me tell you about Calvinism, but in a very casual way.
I'm a big fan of the players making the game world, game universe, game setting richer by, you know, adding people in. And I'm also a fan of if the players end up investing time and energy in a NPC that in my mind was like a throwaway NPC, then I'm fine with that NPC suddenly becoming, you know, a more important cog in what's going on. So I'm very much from the play to find out what happens school when it comes to this stuff. Like I have some general ideas. Like I said, I've got this canned storyline for the scenario, but I'm totally fine ripping that up and going in a different direction, because it really was just meant as a way to put you in different situations to demonstrate different aspects of the rules. I mean, it really was written as like almost a tutorial in a computer game. Now you're going to learn how a chase works. Now you're going to learn how a fight works. So I'm much happier with what you guys have invested in this, and we'll just find some stuff to do. So, and if it ends with Art's character driving a dagger through von Kalsenberg's eye, then that's going to be a great story. So,
mm-hmm.
All right, boys. Well, that's kind of, in my mind, I'm not sure what else to do at this point in time. I don't want to get too rule specific without Jesse here.
Yeah, that's fine.
So it's 11:30.
Not too shabby, yeah.
No, not at all. So everybody good? 9:30.
Yep.
Yeah, I should be good to go.
Yeah.
When's the next one?
Next Sunday.
Next Sunday.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I should be good for next Sunday night.
Yeah. Do you guys want me to send another doodle just in case we don't get, you know, all the way through? Because I'm starting to think that.
Oh yeah, you might as well.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
You
think we're not going to get through the whole adventure?
The whole adventure? Yeah.
Yeah. Huh, Rex? What do you think? I guarantee you, in two more sessions, we will not be through it.
That's okay. It just turns into the campaign, whatever.
I think
the one shot, dude. Remember,
in guilds games,
yeah,
nothing's a one shot.
I've never seen a one shot. Well, I think there. I did do a one shot that lasted one session, but that's just because
you killed us all. Ended.
No, backdoor killed you all.
Really hardcore call through the
and
game.
I just said yes time. And actually I think some of you lived. Some of you lived. It's just
it ended badly for all the ones that lived.
You
had a picture.
Oh yeah, no, you were clashed on the planet. I had a whole adventure on the planet. I knew we would never get to it, but I did it anyway.
Oh, great.
Yeah, you were always gonna crash on the planet. Yeah, so I mean it's like you know, when you curse a gypsy, bad things happen, man. Shit happens. Yep.
So real quick, one thing I do want to share with you. So if you look at the top of the, I guess you call the menu bar, like where you can see your characters on that. So there's an icon with an eye, like the little information icon. Mm-hmm. That is the Schweihänder player compendium.
Wow.
That you can basically click on. So you've got in-game
access. Did you just add this in automatically somehow?
They gave it as a free update. That their Roll20 is their official platform, so this is their first.
From the Kickstarter?
No, this is just something that they, and I don't think it had to do with the Kickstarter, which is something.
Is it free then?
Yeah, basically. Okay. I don't even know if you have to click on anything. I think when you load the Schweihänder character sheet now.
Nice.
It actually knows to load that in. So so that gives you pretty much all the rules that you need.
If you go in alignments and then you read down to the second order in chaos, it's alignments. Triggered. Misspelled.
Yeah, it's not perfect. I haven't spent a lot of time
spell checker.
With it. Yeah.
Anyway.
So
the wingmans.
And then I shared a Dropbox with Jesse and Crack that has the phone optimized version of the rule book. If anybody else wants ping me in Rocket and I'll share that Dropbox with you. So, all right, boys, a good start, a good session zero.
Yeah,
interesting characters.
Excellent. Yeah, a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you very much.
This has been my jam for like the last month or so. I've really just kind of gotten into 30 Years War and gotten into this. So
yeah.
I'm glad we're gonna get to play it.
It'll be fun to goof off in. Yeah.
We're already veering off track. It's perfect.
But it's a good veering.
Yep. Of course. All right.
Yep. All right, boys.
Duck,
you're going to grab the recording for me?
Yeah, how about I just give you you want me to make it into an MP3 for you?
That would be awesome.
Okay, I can do that. And then you can you can edit it as you see fit.
Perfect. Okay. That is a deal. Okay. All right, boys. Then I don't have anything else to add. It was a good night.
Yeah.
Everybody have a great day tomorrow. Stay safe, and we'll see you next Sunday.
All right.
Take care. Have a great night.
Night, boys.
See you.
Bye.